sees us, heals, or drives the demon out of this daughter of the Canaanite woman, simply with the power of his word. There's lots of stories of Jesus healing people, so that's not the striking thing about this particular gospel. What I think troubles modern readers is that he seems to be so mean to her. He doesn't even answer her at the beginning. He dismisses her as a foreigner, and then what seems to us to be the worst thing of all, he doesn't call her a dog, but he refers to her as if she's a dog. The line that disturbs us is, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." So that just sounds to us like one terribly insulting thing for the Lord to say. Because that's what strikes modern ears, let me just start there. I think we have to take into account what it sounded like to the people to whom Jesus was speaking, meaning his own disciples, and even the woman herself. And in order to get that, I like to compare it to a modern example, or a current example. If you think of the English language, at least American English, the worst possible racial slur is so bad a word now that I can't even tell you what it is. It can only be referred to as the N-word. So, and fine, but that is in our times a very, very offensive word to use, such that if I were to use it in the homily and it got posted on the podcast, it might get canceled out, because bad language, not just bad language, but serious insults are not allowed. Okay, so don't use the N-word. That's what it means to us now in the 21st century. But if you go back 75 years, 100 years, 150 years, that's not what it meant. Maybe the best example for us is to go back to Mark Twain. Mark Twain, one of the most famous of American authors, he uses the N-word a lot in his writings. Not only does he use it, his characters use it, and even the blacks use it. I mean, that was just the word, the casual word they used to distinguish between the races, and it didn't have at all the impact that it has now. So the question has troubled especially teachers who are teaching in, I'd say, a junior high school level, or, you know, teaching the works of Mark Twain. What do they do with this? How can they teach, how can they use literature that has offensive language in it? And some people have argued, well, those books have to be removed from the school libraries because they have bad language and it's too offensive. And other people have argued, well, how can you erase great literature simply because of the change in the meaning of the word? The better thing is to educate people about what that word meant back then and how, why it's not acceptable to use it now. Okay, so the N-word is the example. Well, in this case, referring to non-Jews as dogs was a common thing. That's just what they were called. It wasn't as if they were slamming them with the worst possible insult. It was their way, their casual way of distinguishing between Jews and those who are not Jews. Now, it's hard for us to get that because it just sounds so insulting. Some commentators point out that Jesus used the word that was for pets, household pets, puppies, not the street dogs, you know, the mongrels that are, you know, roaming wild in the streets, but the dogs that are beloved of the family. But that doesn't do much to convince us, because it's still a dog and it still sounds insulting. But at least it's not nearly as offensive as in the, when it was said and when it was written, as it seems to be to us. Now, taking this a little bit further, I think it's important to see how Jesus really does see this woman. Jesus is a Jew. The woman is a Canaanite. She's not a Jew. She's a pagan. her first cry for help is, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David." Son of David is a title of the Messiah. "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David." It's a very clear statement of faith. I believe that you have the power to drive the demon out of my daughter. I have faith. And that's what Jesus would have heard immediately. So he gets it, that this woman is someone who has the capacity to be helped because she has faith. In fact, he says at the end, she has great faith. So the problem here is not the woman. The problem is the Jewish perception that such a woman is cursed by God, is outside the realm of possibility being helped by God. And that's the mentality that the apostles have. So I think, I'm not the only one who thinks this, but I think that this whole healing story is more for the apostles than for the woman herself, because the woman had great faith and Jesus knew he was going to help her. So why did he wait? Not only to test her faith, she already had great faith, but more to draw the apostles out of their prejudice and open their eyes, their hearts, to the possibility that God might love this woman too, which was a radical idea for Jews. And so when he doesn't say anything, it's as if he's leaving a space for the disciples to voice their prejudice. And the first thing they say is, "Send her away. Get rid of this pesky woman. She's just a pagan. She doesn't deserve any help." And that's the attitude of the apostles. Send her away. Then Jesus brings up the distinction. What about the lost sheep of the house of Israel? I'm sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, which is what the Jews knew of themselves, house of Israel. Not necessarily lost sheep, but they knew that they were house of Israel. And then what he's doing is like giving this delaying, using this delaying tactic in order to bring out the contrast between how he actually sees the woman and how the apostles see her. So Jesus does distinguish between the Jews and the non-Jews. And that's okay. I mean, I know in some modern trends, they're not allowed to say anybody's different from anybody else. Well, that's just ignoring the reality. People are different. People come from different cultures, different races, different languages, different regions. That's just the fact. That's not prejudice. That's just acknowledging the fact. And so he's highlighting that, knowing that to the apostles it would mean, well, then we're the insiders and she's an outsider. But the woman herself makes this beautiful claim to being an insider in a very humble way. When he says, "You don't give the food, the children's food to the dogs," she said, "Well, actually you do. Actually, you let the puppies have a little food from the table." And she takes this position, this lowly position herself, not to insult herself, but to show how she does have access to what he's come to give. It's a really beautiful and humble way of forcing her way into the family. That's why I think Jesus was so impressed. Wow, you have great faith. You have great faith. My delay didn't stop you. My distinction between the Jews and the Gentiles didn't stop you. My declaration that I was sent to the Jews, that didn't stop you. My comment about the food of the children, that didn't stop you. You have great faith. So this woman, who starts out as an outsider, pagan, not even worthy of attention in the eyes of the listeners, becomes by the end of this short gospel an example for all of us of how to have faith. Okay, so that's a beautiful story of faith. And in the end, we should realize Jesus does not have any prejudice against anybody. He doesn't love the Catholics and hate the Muslims or something like that. That is not how God looks at people. Now, when we're suffering, or when our loved ones are suffering, it can seem to us like God does hate us, or that he is rejecting us. That's how it seems. When we go to the Old Testament, we see the chosen people passing through wave after wave after wave of sufferings. And this is part of the instruction. Suffering does not mean that God has turned against us. Let's look at this first reading. This is Jeremiah, Prophet Jeremiah. Now, we know Jeremiah, but when he was preaching to the people in Jerusalem before the exile, he was telling them, you've got to shape up, you've got to reform, you're facing a punishment. And of course, they didn't listen to him. This particular prophecy, though, is addressed to people who are already in exile. They're already scattered. They have already experienced this trial, which was so great that it made it seem to them like God was against them. And now he's saying to them, no, God is not against you. He has in mind a restoration, a delivery, a salvation of the remnant, of those who are willing to follow after this purification. God has a great plan in mind for you. And it's maybe summed up even more clearly in the psalm, which is also not a psalm from the 150 psalms, it's a selection from Jeremiah 2. Jeremiah, same chapter, 31. He who scattered Israel now gathers them together. The Lord shall ransom Jacob. He shall redeem him from the hand of his conqueror. Well, why was he conquered in the first place? God allowed it. But now, shouting, they shall mount the heights of Zion. They shall come screaming to the Lord's blessing. So this is the other side of suffering. Jeremiah is prophesying. He's talking to people who are suffering. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will console and gladden them after their sorrows. So the experience of the Canaanite woman in the gospel, of trial, of seeming rejection from the Lord, that actually is not just for her. That's the experience of anybody who's striving to follow God and passing through suffering. Old Testament, New Testament, and ourselves right now. We will pass through, and we may be passing through right now, times when it seems like God is forcing us into sorrow, putting us in a situation that we just don't like and can't understand. That happens. When that is the stage we're in, remember the other side. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will console and gladden them after their sorrows. I will restore them after their exile. I will heal their possessed daughter, even though it looks like I'm treating them like dogs. You see this? See the bigger picture? So that's how I think we can interpret these scriptures. God loves us. He loves us as a shepherd. He guards us as a shepherd guards his flock. He loves us with the tenderness of a loving father. But he also knows how terrible sin is for us. He knows what we do to ourselves. He knows how much we need to be purified of our attachments and our vices and our prejudices and all the things that just get in the way of his good plan for us. And so he does allow us to pass through some terrible experiences. Not because he's against us, but because he's for us. He wants to be able to say to us, you have great faith. You have great faith. You've passed through this. I see that you're ready to receive the great blessing I have in mind for you.